So if you're just joining us for the first time today, we are in this series called Stories from Genesis. We're going through the book, but we're not taking every story. We're picking some stories to give us a sense of the shape and the purpose of the book of Genesis as it sits right here at the very first part of our Bible. The whole biblical story begins with this book, and so it's a critical book for us to understand and to ask questions and say, what kind of God is being presented to us in this book of Genesis? Today, I want to suggest that we come to a story, a particular kind of story that is not tremendously dramatic or flashy. It's about Isaac digging wells. Well, digging wells is not particularly an act of courage or heroism. In fact, if you live in the desert, digging wells is something you do to survive, right? It's a simple means of life, is finding water to live in the desert. We've been introduced to this character called Isaac. In fact, I want to remind us that the way in which Isaac is introduced to us is quite dramatic. You remember who he is, right? He is the son of promise. He is the one for whom Abraham and Sarah waited until they were well past childbearing years, till they were 100 years old. Isaac is born to them in their old age, an impossible birth. But here he is. So it's a dramatic entrance into the world for Isaac. We also noted last week that as a boy, we're not sure how old he was, but as a boy, he is involved with his father as God gives this impossible command to Abraham and says, Abraham, take this boy, this son whom you love, and offer him up on an altar, offer him back to me. And so we know Isaac was a part of that dramatic incident as a boy. We don't know how old he was. In contrast to those dramatic incidents in his young life, what we read about is Isaac as an adult is rather, well, ordinary, rather straightforward, really. And I want to suggest to you that as we come to this story, that's good news for you and I, because I don't know about you, but I feel kind of ordinary. You know, we just live life, we're trying to be faithful to what God gives us to do, and we're kind of ordinary people. And I think this is a story to which we can relate. There's nothing dramatic or flashy about digging wells, but there's something significant that we can learn. And what I want to suggest, as I've given this title here, simply faithful, I want us to look at this story in Genesis chapter 26 as a story of Isaac being faithful in the face of very difficult times, actually, in the face of opposition, that he is faithful. Sometimes he's more faithful than others, we will see. He's not a perfect character, but generally he's learning faithfulness, and that's something I think we can relate to. We sometimes fail God, right? But we long to be more and more faithful, and this is what I think we learn through this story of Isaac. I also want to suggest that not only is Isaac faithful in this story, it's also a story that reminds us of God's faithfulness. And we'll see that as we go through the story. But before we start the story, one of the things we've been doing here is learning some memory verses. And so from last week's story, this is the verse. Who can finish it for me? John chapter 1, verse 29. Look. Who? Okay, I wish I had 100 chocolates. Look, let's say it together. Look, the Lamb of God, who takes away the sin of the world. This is such a strong picture in this Abraham story that we looked at last week. Here is today's memory verse. This is from Romans chapter 12 and verse 8. In Romans chapter 12, Paul is really beginning now, having argued for the first half of the book of Romans, theologically establishing a strong foundation for this idea of how do we receive this new life from God. Now he's saying, once we receive this new life from God, this is how we should live. Here's one of his commands for us. And let's say these words together, Romans 12, verse 18. If it is possible, As far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Let's say it again. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Jesus once said, blessed are the peacemakers. Let's look at the story of Isaac and see what we can learn from him. We come to this Isaac story today. Let me just give some brief background thoughts on this story. It is Genesis chapter 26. If you have your Bibles, it would be good to turn to it so you can follow through. There's Bibles on the table if you would like to get one and join in. Genesis chapter 26. Genesis chapter 26 is really an island of relative peace in the midst of the tumultuous Jacob story. Jacob's story is tumultuous from beginning to end. And in fact, the Jacob story begins before Genesis 26. At the end of chapter 25, we find this Jacob and Esau conflict begins. And there in chapter 25, it begins, and then it picks up again in chapter 27, this conflict between Jacob and Esau. And in between these two stories of conflict between brothers, we have the story of their father, Isaac. And it really is, in some ways, this island of peace in the midst of the dramatic story of Jacob and Esau. Secondly, I would like us to notice that Isaac is presented, really, many commentators would observe, he seems to be presented to us as a rather timid man who doesn't even stand up for his own rights, quite in contrast to his son Jacob, who is quite aggressively stealing the rights of others, right? So Isaac is really a contrasting character to his son Jacob. Jacob and Esau, we'll look at their story and try to get our heads around that story next week. Gordon Wenneman, his commentary suggests this. We see Isaac as a timid, peace-loving man who avoids conflict with his neighbors whenever possible, such a contrast to his contentious sons who are forever squabbling. And then he says this, listen to how he describes this chapter. This chapter serves, therefore, to heighten our appreciation for the unnaturalness of this intrafamilial strife that is about to tear Isaac's family apart in the following chapter. It's an interesting observation, I think, that this Isaac comes to us as a man who loves peace and is seeking peace, even with those who are opposing him, and how different that is from what happens in the next chapter. I also would like us to remember, as we've been noting many times, that we're looking at these stories through the eyes of the narrator who writes these stories. And so what I want us to remember is that as we look through the eyes of Moses, and let's assume now that Moses is writing these stories, so it's several hundred years now after these events have taken place, Moses is writing the account of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and he's writing these stories, but what he's noticing and the way he writes the story of Isaac, it seems very clear that what he's wanting us to do is to look at the story of Isaac and to see its parallel to the story of Abraham. And here's what Mr. Sailhammer observes in his commentary, that each of the brief narratives that make up chapter 26 portray Isaac in a situation or circumstance that has its parallel in the life of Abraham. It's a very parallel event. Okay? Isaac, there's some differences, but there's many parallels. And so, what's that all about? It seems, Sailhammer's observation would be that what the writer seems to be wanting to do is to bring out in this story the fact that just as God was faithful to Abraham, so now God is also faithful to his son Isaac. So it's really presenting this story of God's faithfulness to this one who has been called now the son of promise. So I'd like us to hear this Isaac story together. It really breaks up pretty neatly into five little sections in chapter 26. So we'll take each one of them as well. We will begin in chapter 25 with two verses. But here's the questions I want to ask as we look through each part of the story. These are the three questions I would like us to ask. I want us to notice the parallel to the Abraham story. We'll see that in each one. And then how do we observe God's faithfulness in this little vignette, this little section of the story, as we break it up and look at each one separately? And then how do we observe Isaac being faithful or not? Sometimes Isaac is faithful, sometimes not so much. So let me invite you to turn to chapter 25. This is really where the story of Isaac as an adult begins. Genesis chapter 25 and verse 19. And listen as I read these three verses, verses 19 through 21. Listen for the parallel to the Abraham story. All right, you ready for it? This is the account of the family line of Abraham's son, Isaac. Abraham became the father of Isaac. And Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean from Paddan Aram, and the sister of Laban the Aramean. Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was childless. The Lord answered his prayer, and his wife Rebekah became pregnant. So, as you hear that story, what parallel do you see to Abraham's story? Something about childlessness, right? So, Abraham, Sarah. Sarah could not have children. And finally, at their impossibly old age, God gives them the son Isaac. Now he marries Rebecca. And what's going on here? They don't have any other children. What's going on? Now God's promises are at stake again. Right? The promises were at stake there. Without an heir, how could God's promises of all these descendants be fulfilled? And here it is again in Isaac's experience, childlessness. It really helps us, I think, if we observe God's faithfulness here, it helps us to remember and understand this is the God that's being presented to us in the book of Genesis. He's a God who is involved in the real stuff of life. He's not a God who is distant. He's the God who opens and closes wombs. He's the God who allows families to grow. He's the God who blesses through children. And so this is the picture of God that is being presented to us here. How do we observe Isaac being faithful here? It seems that he prays with faith, right? The story is very simple compared to the Isaac story. Isaac prays, and God hears his prayer and answers. No doubt, Isaac has a sense of the miracle of his own life. Certainly, he's born to very old parents. He wasn't there when they were praying so earnestly for children. Of course, he came as the result of their prayers. But certainly, he heard the stories. And you just wonder, as those stories got told to him over and over and over again, that his own faith in God became strong. And so he prays, and God answers his prayer. We also think about this story that we looked at last week, this difficult story of Isaac being put on the altar, tied up, and Abraham is ready to plunge the knife into him. We don't know. We don't have any record of what Isaac felt during that time, but he did experience it. And so we wonder, what does he learn about God? He's learned about God, that God is faithful, God can be trusted. And so he prays, and God delivers, God answers. And we'll look next week at his answer as these twins are conceived and born to Isaac and Rebekah. Well, let's pick up the story in chapter 26, verse 1. And again, we're looking for parallels, which become pretty obvious as we read. In fact, the narrator helps us see the parallel. Chapter 26, verse 1. Now there was a famine in the land, besides the previous famine in Abraham's time. And Isaac went to Abimelech, king of Philistines, in Gerar. And the Lord appeared to Isaac and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Live in the land where I tell you to live. Stay in this land for a while, and I will be with you, and I will bless you. For to you and your descendants I will give all these lands, and will confirm the oath that I swore to your father Abraham. I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky, and I will give them all these lands. And through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed, because Abraham obeyed me and did everything I required of him, keeping my commands and my decrees and my instructions." What are the obvious ties to Abraham's story here? What do you see here as the obvious parallel? It's a famine, right? A famine in the land. It's a famine in the land of during Abraham's time. And in fact, in that the famine was in chapter 12. And when the famine happened in the land, Abraham went down to Egypt, right? Later on in Abraham's life, it's not as a result of famine, but as after Lot's rescue in chapter 20 of the book of Genesis, Abraham actually goes to this same place to live among the Philistines where Abimelech is the king. Right, so there's a double parallel here where there's this famine, Abraham goes down to Egypt. There's also a parallel in that Abraham also had interaction with the same king, Abimelech, in the land of the Philistines. How do we observe God's faithfulness here? I want you to notice what God says to Isaac as he tells him, stay in this land for a while. And then he says what? He says, I will be with you. I will be with you. To my knowledge, this is the first time in the Bible that God says this to someone. This is the first time God says it. And it's interesting that he says it to Isaac. He says, don't go down to Egypt. Just stay in the land of the Philistines. And I will be with you. And I will bless you. And this language of blessing, we've noticed it from Genesis chapter 1, right? This language of blessing is a theme which goes all the way through all of these stories of Genesis. And what we're learning is that God is a good God, and there's a God who loves to bless the people that he's made in his image. And here he is, he's saying, stay here, I will be with you, and I will bless you. Some commentators observe in this language here, as God reaffirms the promise that he made to Abraham, now he reaffirms it to Isaac, it seems like the parameters of the promise grow even bigger. As God says, all of these lands I'm going to give you. It seems like the promises to Isaac even become bigger than they were to Abraham. God is faithful here. How do we observe Isaac being faithful? Well, we'll see in the next verse that we read that Isaac obeys. He stays in this land of the Philistines. But what is striking here is, to me, what's one of the striking characteristics of this text as I read it is this, that God blesses Isaac because of the faithfulness of Abraham. It's very interesting to look at it that way and to say, God is really blessing Abraham, he's blessing Isaac because of the faithfulness of his father. So that's an interesting thing to observe. We do see Isaac's faithfulness is growing, sometimes up, sometimes down, but it's growing also. But once again, we observe the significance of the character of Abraham in the whole story of the Bible. It comes out here. Because Abraham obeyed me and did everything I required of him, keeping my commands, my decrees, and my instructions. Well, let's pick up the story at verse 6. So Isaac stayed in Gerar. And when the men of that place asked him about his wife, he said, she's my sister. Because he was afraid to say, she's my wife, he thought, the men of this place might kill me on account of Rebekah because she is beautiful. When Isaac had been there a long time, Abimelech, the king of the Philistines, looked down from a window and saw Isaac making out with his wife, Rebekah. That's actually literally what it means, caressing his wife, Rebekah. So Abimelech summoned Isaac and said, she's really your wife. Why did you say she is my sister? Isaac answered him, because I thought I might lose my life on account of her. Then Abimelech said, what is this you have done to us? One of the men might well have slept with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon all of us. So Abimelech gave orders to all the people, anyone who harms this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. So what are the parallels to the Abraham story here? We haven't gone through all of the stories of Abraham, so we didn't go through that particular story. But what is the obvious parallel here? She is my sister. She's not my wife. In fact, Abraham does this twice. What's going on here? What is it about these strong patriarchs? Is this a case of the sins of the father being passed on to the next generation? I don't know. Isaac wasn't alive when Abraham did it, but one has to believe that the stories were told as Isaac was growing up. It seems to me that we can take this as fathers as a call to be careful as to the kind of examples of faith that we leave to our own children. Here in this story, ironically, it's Abimelech who comes up as the man who has greater sense of righteousness. Right? He is the man who declares that, you know, if one of the men had slept with your wife, great guilt would have come upon us. He seems to understand God better than perhaps Isaac does. So here's a moment of weakness in Isaac's life. Could he not trust God? It's a challenge for all of us. There are times when we also fall. We also don't trust God for certain things in our lives. Let's pick up the story and move on. Chapter 26, verse 12, verses 12 to 17. Isaac planted crops in that land, and the same year reaped hundredfold because the Lord blessed him. The man became rich, and his wealth continued to grow until he became very wealthy. He had so many flocks and herds and servants that the Philistines envied him. So all of the wells that his father's servants had dug in the time of his father Abraham, the Philistines stopped up, filling them with earth. Then Abimelech said to Isaac, "Move away from us. You have become too powerful for us." So Isaac moved away, and from there, he encamped in the valley of Gerar, where he settled. Once again, we haven't looked specifically at all of these Abraham stories, but if you know some of the Abraham stories, what is the parallel here? In the time when Abraham was growing wealthy. After Abraham had been in Egypt, he said, "This is my sister Sarah," but then after that, God had blessed him in Egypt. He became wealthy in Egypt. Chapter 13 says Abraham went from Egypt up to the Negev, which is similar to this region of the Philistines, close to it at least. And it says in chapter 13, verses 1 and 2, it says, he went with Lot and everything that he had, and Abraham became very wealthy in livestock and silver and gold. So the same thing happens, right? Abraham becomes very wealthy. Isaac becomes very wealthy. In chapter 13, verse 7, about Abraham, it says, quarreling arose between Abraham's herders and Lot's herders. And so Abraham said to Lot, "Let's not have this quarreling between us. Is not the whole land before you? Let's part company." Right? That's what happened to Abraham. It's a very similar story with Isaac, right? Isaac has become so wealthy, and he's got so many flocks and herds and servants that the Philistines are afraid that he is becoming more powerful than they are. And so this quarreling happens, and they part ways. It's a very, very similar story. How do we observe God's faithfulness here? Well, the text tells us very specifically that God blessed Isaac. And God blesses Isaac in this very tangible way. God's blessings do not always come in these physical, tangible ways, but God did bless Isaac in this way, in this time. One commentator has noted that this kind of blessing from God is really the first fruits of God's blessing. It's just the beginning of God's blessing. But this is what God does. He blesses Isaac, and he becomes wealthy, and he becomes powerful in this land. How do we observe Isaac being faithful here or not? Well, what we see him doing is moving away. He moves away. I want us to observe the situation here as clearly as we can. So Abraham had dug this well, right? And because of the opposition, what happened? What did the servants of Abimelech do? They filled the well with earth and filled it up, right? I want us to notice two things, two characteristics, which we might miss if we just kind of read it over quickly. First is that Beersheba, Gerar, this area of the land is really desert. And so a well is source of life. This is where the water comes from. Beersheba is not Bishkek. In Bishkek, what happens? We have the value, the incredible privilege of the mountains just uphill from us, right? Just to the south of us. All summer long, water flows through the ditches and the canals of Bishkek. Where does that water come from? It comes from the mountains, right? It's a beautiful privilege that we have. It sustains life. Without water, life doesn't exist. Beersheba doesn't have these mountains. And so these wells are incredibly important for life. Here's the other factor which was brought clear to me this week as I was talking with a friend. In this area, the water is very deep, reportedly. So, in fact, there's one website here that described the wells that were dug in this area. There's an archaeological excavation that comes from Elijah's time. It's not from Isaac's time, but it's from Elijah's time. And they've discovered a well that is 80 meters deep. So we don't know if these wells were 80 meters, but we do know that the water's deep here. It's far from the surface of the land. We also need to think about the era of history in which Isaac lived. Most likely, it's before the invention of steel tools. Certainly, Isaac did not just drive his drilling rig up there and turn on the motor and, you know, watch it drill. How did they drill these wells? How long would it take them to drill these wells, to dig these wells with primitive tools? We don't know, but we can guess. Perhaps months it would take to get to this water, which was so necessary for life to exist in this part of the world. And so we come to this idea here of these wells being stopped up. How significant is that? And how would you react and respond if you had spent months digging, finding water, and then someone comes and fills it up? What does the text tell us? Isaac moved on. Let's pick the story up because it really captures more of this theme here. Verse 18, I believe, is really a recapture of what's been said, and then chapter 19 goes forward. Verse 18, Isaac reopened the wells that had been dug in the time of his father Abraham, which the Philistines had stopped up after Abraham had died, and he gave him the same names as his father had given them. Verse 19, Isaac's servants dug in the valley and discovered a well of fresh water there, but the herders of Gerar quarreled with those of Isaac, and they said, "This water is ours." So he, Isaac, named the well Esek. The word Esek simply means dispute, because they disputed with him. Verse 21, they dug another well, but they quarreled over that one also. So he named it Sitna. Sitna means opposition. He moved on from there and dug another well. It's pretty easy for us to read these three dig another wells, right? But think about what was involved in this. And no one quarreled over it, and so he named it Rehoboth, which means room. And he said, "Now the Lord has given us room, and we will flourish in the land." From there he went up to Beersheba, and that night the Lord appeared to him, and he said, "I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. I will bless you. I will increase the number of your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham." And Isaac built an altar there and called on the name of the Lord. And there he pitched his tent. And there, of all things, his servants dug a well. Once again, the story clearly follows. This Abraham story picks up in this same place where Abraham had dug a well previously. How do we observe God's faithfulness in this story? Well, what we see is God comes to Isaac. In response to Isaac's actions here, which we'll look at in a second, how does God respond to him? He says, I am the God of your father, Abraham. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. Here it is again. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. And I will bless you, and I will increase the number of your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham. So again, this narrator is wanting us to know God is faithful, God is faithful, God is faithful. How do we see Isaac's response here, being faithful or not? I believe we see him being faithful here. And it's hard for us to know how to look at Abraham or Isaac here in this story. But what I want us to observe here is in this one short paragraph, one well is reopened. And what it seems is that four fresh water wells are dug. As we think about what was involved with this, how do we understand Isaac's lack of resistance here? Imagine yourself in Isaac's place. Imagine that you have spent weeks, let's say months, digging this well. The camp is around the well. Water is coming up, and now there's dispute. From Gerar, the Philistines come in. They say this water is ours. This has been repeated through history, right? Wars are fought over water. But how do we understand Isaac's response here? How do we understand? He's invested so much to get this life-giving water for him and his camp. And then someone comes and said, no, it's ours. What are his possible options here? He could fight, right? He could fight. He could get angry. He could go after them. The story, as it's told to us, says Isaac doesn't fight back. He turns, he moves over here, he digs another one. At great expense, great time, great effort. They come again, they say, this is ours. Isaac moves over here, digs another one. They don't come after him, and so he says, God has allowed us to flourish in this land. How do we understand this story? We have to ask the question, and I believe as we try to connect this story to our lives, we have to ask the question, what's worth fighting about in my life right now? Isaac could have fought over these wells, and probably rightfully so if he had done all the work to dig. He could have fought for justice and fought for his own rights here, but he chose not to. So we have to ask the question in our own experience, in the face of opposition, in the face of something I've invested deeply in, perhaps some kind of work that I've invested deeply in, and somebody is opposing it, somebody wants to take it away. What does God want me to fight for here? I want to suggest that this is not a story which calls us to just passivity, of just allow ourselves always to be pushed around. There are some things that are worth standing for. There are some things, and we read the whole story of the Bible, there's some truths that we must stand for and fight for, in fact. Justice and righteousness. But if it's this kind of thing where something that I'm deeply invested in, is this fight coming out of my own protection, of my own work? Is this a fight that I should really be worth fighting for, or should I be a peacemaker in this situation? It seems like Isaac acts as a peacemaker here. Let's finish the story, chapter 26, verses 26 to the end. Meanwhile, Abimelech had come to him from Gerar with Ahuzath, his personal advisor, and Phicol, the commander of his forces. And Isaac asked them, why have you come to me since you were hostile to me and sent me away? And they answered, we clearly saw that the Lord was with you. And so we said, there ought to be a sworn agreement between us and you. Let us make a treaty with you that you will do us no harm, just as we did not harm you, but always treated you well and sent you away peacefully. And now you are blessed by the Lord. Isaac then made a feast for them. They ate and drank. Early the next morning, the men swore an oath to each other, and then Isaac sent them on their way, and they went away peacefully. That day Isaac's servants came and told him about the well they had dug. They said, "We have found water." He called it Sheba. And to this day, the name of the town has been called Beersheba. Well, again, we just notice in a parallel to the Abraham story that Abraham also had this kind of exchange with Abimelech in chapter 21. But what we observe here in this story is God's faithfulness. God's presence is clearly evident to Abimelech, right? Abimelech says to Isaac, "We can see that God is with you. He is blessing you." And in that way, God is blessing even Abimelech through the presence of Isaac. And so the beginnings of the fulfillment of his promise to Abraham are already coming to pass. Through you, I'm going to bless the nations of the earth. And how do we observe Isaac being faithful or not? Well, in the face of opposition, in the face of this kind of opposition, it seems like Isaac chose not to be combative. He chose to be the peacemaker. He chose to be the peacemaker. He just kept on digging wells. In what ways does this story invite us to respond? How should we respond to this story? I want to notice, first of all, that these stories, as they're told to us, invite us to trust in God. In particular, I want us to notice trusting God as our provider. Do you remember we looked at this word provider last week? Because when Abraham was about to offer Isaac on the altar, what happened? God provided this lamb, right? This ram that was caught in the thicket, and it was brought and put on the altar instead of Isaac. And Abraham said, "Now I'm going to call this place, the Lord will provide." And we looked at this idea of God looking ahead. Provide means to look forward, to look ahead, to see to it that everything will be taken care of. And we see in this story, I wonder in the back of Isaac's mind, as he had experienced that from the position of the altar, right? He was on the altar and that lamb took his place. Now he is learning to trust. Okay, they can steal this work that I've done from me. I will trust God to provide. And we'll take this next step. Learning to trust that God sees ahead. God will take care of the future. We also notice and we give thanks to God for his faithfulness to his promises. And so, again, from the narrator's point of view, I believe what we see is Moses writing to show how God was faithful through all of these stories. Just as he was faithful to Abraham, so he is faithful to Isaac. And he keeps on blessings. He keeps on wanting to bless. And he's keeping his promises even when we don't do it right. The third way in which we can respond, I believe, is a question of how we look at these wells. What example can we take from the way in which Isaac dug these wells? Let me suggest this. Let's keep our work, the work that we do, the work for God, the work that we do at work, the work we do wherever, the things that we personally invest in deeply, let's be sure we hold those things in healthy perspective. Let's remember that ultimately the work is God's, that God is the one of the big picture. And we need so much wisdom to know how to look at the things that we have invested in deeply, whether that's a project or a business or whatever it is, that we can hold that in healthy perspective. And if in some way that gets taken away from us, can we trust God to provide the next step? Can we just go on and dig another well? It's a challenge, I think, for all of us to think about as we seek to live for God's glory in this world. And then finally, I want to suggest from this story, this story invites us to respond in these words, which I think we can use to describe Isaac: faithfulness, patience, perseverance in the face of opposition. It seems like those are the characteristics that we see in Isaac. And so we come back and close with our memory verse here, Romans 12, verse 8. If it is possible, As far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. So we ask the question of ourselves as we think about the network of relationships, working relationships, living relationships. Can we ask the question, am I a peacemaker or am I a peace breaker? And if I'm a peace breaker, is there a really good reason for that? Or is it just something that's selfish? There's a lot we can learn from this story, I believe, as we see this rather ordinary character, Isaac, dig a well, and then dig another well, and then dig another well. Let us learn how to be faithful to what God calls us to do, and to hold the work that we do for Him in good perspective. Father, as we come to you today, we desire to really know, to read these stories carefully, to see you as you reveal yourself to us in these stories. And we long to know truth here. And don't let us be led astray by just our own imaginations. But from these stories, we see you as a God who is faithful. We see you as a God who is a provider. We see Isaac, and we look at him, and sometimes we shake our heads, we're not sure, but it sure seems like he's a faithful worker who is holding this work that he's doing in a healthy perspective. So teach us, O Lord, to do the work that we do with all our hearts, but help us to keep it in healthy perspective. Help us to know that it's your work ultimately. And don't let us be guilty of being peace breakers for purely selfish reasons. Help us, Lord. We need your strength. We need your wisdom. We know that you desire for us to live in harmony, in unity. So teach us, Lord. Help us to be your faithful servants in this world. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.